listening to Sheldon Wallen on Inverted Totalitarianism. This classic from the AR Archives was recorded in Willits, California in 2003. Sheldon Wallen was an award-winning scholar. He passed away in 2015. This program is produced by Alternative Radio, an independent nonprofit in our 39th year. We're supported solely by individuals just like you. We feature such voices as Wendell Potter, Kuhan Pakmander, Ralph Nader, Peter Beinert, Francesca Albanese, Chris Hedges, and Arundhati Roy. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. For copies of today's program, Sheldon Wallen on Inverted Totalitarianism, and for Howard Zinn's classic book, A People's History of the United States, call us 1-800-444-1977. That's 1-800-444-1977. Or go online, our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, that's alternativeradio.org. Printed transcripts, PDFs, and MP3s of this program are free of charge. Just call us, 1-800-444-1977. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamyan. Thank you for listening.
It's just insane. We have the most insane system of health insurance on the planet. We're the only industrialized country, the only developed country that in which the citizens of the country can go bankrupt or lose their homes or die because they don't have coverage or they get their policies canceled.
That's Wendell Potter, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamyan. This edition of AR features Wendell Potter on health insurance, an insane system. The murder of United Healthcare CEO on a Midtown Manhattan street unleashed, the New York Times reported, a torrent of morbid glee from patients and others who say they have had negative experiences with health insurance companies at some of the hardest times of their lives. Some of the comments were, thoughts and deductibles to the family. Another one said, unfortunately, my condolences are out of network. The dark commentary highlighted deep anger over the state of health insurance. Millions simply can't afford it and go without. And many who are on some plan have such inadequate coverage and high deductibles that they can't afford to pay for anything. The answer, Ralph Nader says, is single payer. Everybody in, nobody out. That would bring down prices. But the handful of corporations who monopolize the health insurance industry don't want that. Why? That would cut into their profits. So the insanity continues. Our guest today is Wendell Potter. He was a former Cigna public relations executive and today he's an outspoken critic of the health insurance industry. This classic from the AR archives is even more relevant today than it was when it was originally recorded over a decade ago. Wendell Potter spoke at Powell's Bookstore in Portland, Oregon.
I think I'll begin by just answering a question that I'm often asked when I am speaking to groups, and that is, why did you do what you did? Why don't more people do what you did? And what led you to do what you decided to do? There was no one thing that led me to do this. It was a culmination of
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Which is it? Have you overcome personal issues? Or are you the target of a smear campaign? It can't be both. It's clear to me that you're not being honest with us or the American people, because you know the truth would disqualify you from getting the job.
Democrats grill Pete Hegseth, Donald Trump's pick to become defense secretary, during his one-day Senate confirmation hearing. But Hegseth appears to be moving closer to getting confirmed after Republican Senator Joni Ernst announces she will support him. Ernst is a veteran and a survivor of sexual assault. We'll air excerpts of the hearing and speak to two veterans who were arrested during the hearing.
War fighting, accountability.
Hey, corrupt senators, when are you going to stop bombing babies in Gaza? Veterans are committing suicide and are homeless. My father, a veteran, committed suicide. And you're spending money to bomb babies.
Then, surviving war and HIV, queer, HIV positive, and running out of medication in Gaza. We'll look at how Israel's war on Gaza has blocked HIV/AIDS medication from getting through. We'll hear the story of a 27-year-old disabled gay man in Gaza City who's HIV positive. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's military stepped up attacks on the Gaza Strip Tuesday, bombing a school-turned-shelter and densely packed residential neighborhoods, killing 62 people over a 24-hour period. The intense Israeli artillery shelling has cut off electricity at the Indonesian hospital in North Gaza. In Rafah, an Israeli strike on a home killed 5 people, including a woman. 4 others were injured. In central Gaza, at least 10 Palestinians were killed in an Israeli airstrike Tuesday on a home in Deir al-Balah. This is Kafaya Shakura, a displaced Palestinian who lost family members in the bombing.
We were sleeping, and all of a sudden we received calls saying that the family had been martyred. They were renting Shaheen's house. My uncles had rented it. We started reading the news, one report after another, with all of the names coming in order. We were shocked by the news. Among them were my uncle, his wife, my uncle and his son, and his daughter, who was displaced with her children.
Gaza's health ministry says the latest attacks brought the official toll from Israel's 15-month-long war on Gaza to more than 46,700 killed and 110,000 injured, though a recent study in the medical journal Lancet puts the true death toll at least 40% higher. Tuesday's stepped-up assault came even as mediators for a ceasefire said negotiations are at their closest point yet. In the occupied West Bank, at least 6 Palestinians, including a 15-year-old boy and 3 brothers, were killed in an Israeli airstrike on the Jenin refugee camp Tuesday. Rafa news agency reported Israeli forces fired 3 missiles at a group of people, injuring several others. The attack came amidst more intense Israeli raids across the West Bank, in which at least another 12 Palestinians were arrested. Meanwhile, Israel's continued near-daily attacks attacks on southern Lebanon in violation of a November ceasefire with Hezbollah, with Israeli forces blowing up houses and bulldozing roads in several villages. In the United States, the death toll from devastating fires across the Los Angeles area has risen to 25 people. Thousands of residents are preparing for more evacuation orders as officials warn of particularly dangerous weather, with a forecast of more powerful winds blowing through the region, which could strengthen to up to 70 miles per hour. Firefighting crews are racing to contain the largest blazes, Palisades and Eaton fires, which have scorched and flattened entire communities. Dozens of people are still missing. President Biden said Monday the cost of recovery could be in the tens of billions of dollars.
Although the federal government is going to cover 100% of the cost for the next 180 days for things like firefighter overtime pay, debris removal, temporary shelters, it's going to cost tens of billions of dollars to get Los Angeles back to where it was. So we're going to need Congress to step up to provide funding to get this done.
Researchers at UCLA's Climate and Wildfire Research Initiative say global heating contributed to the wildfires. They estimate LA's hotter climate accounted for roughly 25% of the extreme fuel moisture deficit present when the fires exploded, fanned by intense Santa Ana winds. Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg outlined plans Tuesday to lay off 5% of the social media company's global workforce, or about 3,600 people. The mass layoffs come just days after Zuckerberg announced Meta would end fact-checking across its Facebook, WhatsApp, and Instagram platforms. This comes as Zuckerberg is planning to co-host a black tie reception Monday with Republican mega-donor Miriam Adelson to celebrate Trump's inauguration. Meta also gave $1 million to the Trump Inaugural Fund. Zuckerberg will have a prominent position at Trump's inauguration, seated near fellow multi-billionaires Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk, among Trump's cabinet nominees and elected officials. Former First Lady Michelle Obama said she will not attend Monday's inauguration. A statement from the office of Barack and Michelle Obama reads in part, "This is obviously not the outcome we had hoped for, given our profound disagreements with the Republican ticket on a whole host of issues, but living in a democracy is about recognizing that our point of view won't always win out and being willing to accept the peaceful transfer of power." Donald Trump's pick to become Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth appears to be moving closer to securing enough votes to be confirmed in the Senate after Republican Senator Joni Ernst of Iowa announced she'll back Hegseth. Ernst is a veteran and survivor of sexual assault who'd initially expressed skepticism over Hegseth. She reversed her opposition after she was targeted with a $1 million ad campaign in Iowa against her critical comments ahead of Hegseth's confirmation hearings. His confirmation can only be blocked if three or more Republicans join Democrats in opposing the former Fox News host who once served in the Army National Guard. During Tuesday's hearing, Senate Democrats grilled Hegseth on a number of issues, including his criticism of women in combat, allegations he raped a woman in 2017, reports of public drunkenness, and his record running two veterans organizations where he was accused of financial mismanagement. In exchange with Maine Independent Senator Angus King, Hegseth was unable to say whether he would abide by the international laws of warfare.
Are we going to abide by the Geneva Convention and the prohibitions on torture, or are we not? Is it going to depend on the circumstances?
As I've stated multiple times, the Geneva Conventions are what we base ours. But what an American First national security policy is not going to do is hand its prerogatives over to international bodies that make decisions about how our men and women make decisions on the battlefield.
We'll have more on Pete Hegseth's Senate confirmation hearings after headlines. We'll be playing highlights and speak with two people who were arrested for protesting during the hearings. They're both military veterans. President Trump's nominee to serve as U.S. Attorney General is appearing before the Senate Judiciary Committee today. Pam Bondi served as Florida's Attorney General from 2011 to 19 and was in Trump's defense team during his first impeachment trial. Bondi now works at the Trump-aligned America First Policy Institute. As a lobbyist, her clients have included Amazon, GM, Uber, and the Nation of Qatar. Senators will confront Bondi over her pledge to support Trump's campaigns to prosecute his political enemies using the Justice Department. In a 2023 Fox News appearance, Bondi said, quote, the Department of Justice, the prosecutors will be prosecuted, the bad ones, the investigators will be investigated, she said. In Washington, D.C., outgoing Secretary of State Antony Blinken was interrupted by anti-war and pro-Palestinian protesters Tuesday as he delivered a keynote address at the Atlanta Council. It was Blinken's final speech as the U.S. top diplomat. Protesters repeatedly interrupted the event, with one addressing the Secretary of State as Bloody Blinken, Secretary of Genocide.
We made clear there was a path to mutual return to compliance if Tehran was willing to take the steps necessary. At the same time, we strengthened America's robust sanctions regime on Iran and delivered on President Biden's commitment.
You will forever be known as Bloody Blinken, Secretary of Genocide. You have the blood of hundreds of thousands of innocent people on your hands. We have spent a
thank
year.
You. I respect your views. Please allow me to share mine. Thank you.
The Senate Foreign Relations Committee today is holding confirmation hearings on President-elect Trump's pick to succeed Tony Blinken, Florida Republican Senator Marco Rubio. He's a staunch supporter of Israel's war on Gaza and has called for the complete eradication of Hamas. Rubio is the son of Cuban immigrants who's fought to maintain the catastrophic U.S. embargo on Cuba. President Biden has announced plans to lift the state sponsor of terrorism designation for Cuba. The move came less than a week ahead of President-elect Trump's inauguration and nearly 4 years after Trump put Havana back on the terrorism list as one of his final acts in office during his first term. Cuban President Miguel Díaz-Canel wrote in response, quote, it's a decision in the right direction, although belated and with limited scope. The blockade and most of the extreme measures implemented since 2017 to suffocate the Cuban economy and cause shortages for our people remain in place, unquote. After the announcement, the Cuban government said it would release 553 political prisoners. U.S. House lawmakers on Tuesday approved legislation that would ban transgender women and girls from participating in school sports. The bill would prohibit federal funding from going to K through 12 schools that allow transgender students on girls' sports teams. Just two Democrats joined all Republicans in voting in favor, Representatives Vicente Gonzalez and Henry Cuellar of Texas. And Yoon Suk-yeol has become South Korea's first sitting president to be arrested after he was taken into custody for questioning in multiple criminal investigations related to a short-lived martial law declaration in early December. South Korean authorities scaled walls and cut through barbed wire to enter Yoon's residence in the capital, Seoul, bringing an end to a dramatic weeks-long standoff. Yoon has also been impeached by South Korean lawmakers and suspended, but will remain in office until the Constitutional Court ratifies the impeachment. Protesters in Seoul braved the cold early Wednesday ahead of Yoon's arrest.
I believe the arrests should take place as soon as possible. In fact, the side of President Yoon Suk-yeol might argue that this concerns national dignity and that the status of the president should not be treated in this way. But regardless of all that, I think it's wrong for the leader of a rebellion to not face any legal consequences, and even though an arrest warrant has been issued, continue to resist that. The law should be equally applied to all people, and no matter how high the president's position, I firmly believe impunity is absolutely wrong.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Donald Trump's pick to become defense secretary, Pete Hegseth, appears to be moving closer to securing enough votes to be confirmed by the Senate. On Tuesday, Republican Senator Joni Ernst of Iowa announced she's going to back the former Fox News host. Ernst is a former military officer and survivor of a sexual assault. She initially had expressed skepticism over Hegseth. The New Yorker's Jane Mayer revealed a dark money group tied to Elon Musk had spent $500,000 on ads pressuring Ernst to back Hegseth. Hegseth's confirmation can only be blocked if three or more Republicans join Democrats in opposing him. During Tuesday's one-day hearing, Senate Democrats grilled Hegseth on a number of issues, including his criticism of women in combat, allegations he raped a woman in 2017, reports of public drunkenness, and his record running two veterans groups where he was accused of financial mismanagement. The hearing ended after just one round of questions after Republicans rejected a request by Democrats for a second round of questions. Many Democrats also criticized Hegseth for refusing to meet privately with them, which was unprecedented before Tuesday's hearing. Democratic Senator Tammy Duckworth of Illinois questioned Hegseth's qualifications to run the Defense Department, which employs over 3 million people. Duckworth is an Iraq War veteran, Purple Heart recipient, former Assistant Secretary of the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. She lost both her legs in combat in Iraq.
What is the highest level of international negotiations that you have engaged in, that you have led in? Because the Secretary of Defense does lead international security negotiations. There are three main ones that the Secretary of Defense leads and signs. Can you name at least one of them?
Could you repeat the question, Senator?
Sure. What is the highest level of international security agreement that you have led? And can you name some that the Secretary of Defense would lead? There's three main ones.
I have not been involved in international security arrangements because I have not been in government other than serving in the military. So my job has been to
The answer is, can you name one of the three main ones that the Secretary of Defense signs?
You're talking about defense arrangements. I mean, NATO might be one of one that you're referring to.
Status of Forces Agreement would be one of them.
Status of Forces Agreement. I've been a part of teaching about Status of Forces Agreement.
But you don't remember to mention it? You're not qualified, Mr. Hegseth. You're not qualified. You talk about repairing our defense industrial complex. You're not qualified to that. You could do acquisition and cross-servicing agreements, which essentially are security agreements. You can't even mention that. You've done none of those. You talked about the Indo-Pacific a little bit, and I'm glad that you mentioned it. Can you name the importance of at least one of the nations in the ASEAN, and what type of agreement we have with at least one of those nations? And how many nations are in ASEAN, by the way?
I couldn't tell you the exact amount of nations in that, but I know we have allies in South Korea and Japan and in AUKUS with Australia and trying to work on submarines with them.
Mr. Hegseth, none of those countries are in ASEAN.
Across.
None of those three countries that you've mentioned are in ASEAN. I suggest you do a little homework.
Democratic Senator Tammy Duckworth of Illinois questioning Pete Hegseth, Trump's nominee to be defense secretary. This is Hegseth responding to Democratic New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, who questioned him about his past comments opposing women serving in combat roles.
I respect every single female service member that has put on the uniform, past and present. My critiques, Senator, recently and in the past, and from personal experience, have been instances where I've seen standards lowered, and you mentioned 11 Alpha, 11 Bravo, MOS, places in units, and the book that has been referenced multiple times here, The War on Warriors. I spent months talking to active duty service members, men and women, low ranks, high ranks, combat arms and not combat arms, and what each and every one of them told me, and which personal instances have shown me, is that in ways direct, indirect, overt, and subtle, standards have been changed inside infantry training units, ranger school, infantry battallions, to ensure that
Give me an example. I get you're making these
generalized
statements.
Commanders meet quotas to have a certain number of female infantry officers or infantry enlisted, and that disparages those women
commanders
who are incredibly
capable
of meeting that
standard. Commanders do not
have to meet
quotas for the infantry. Commanders do not have to have a quota for women in the infantry. That does not exist. It does not exist. And your statements are creating the impression that these exist, because they do not. There are not quotas. We want the most lethal force. But I'm telling you, having been here for 15 years listening to testimony about men and women in combat and the type of operations that were successful in Afghanistan and in Iraq, women were essential for many of those units. When Ranger units went in to find where the terrorists hiding in Afghanistan or in Iraq, if they had a woman in the unit, they could go in, talk to the women in a village, say, where are the terrorists hiding? Where are the weapons hiding? And get crucial information to make sure that we can win that battle. So just, you cannot denigrate women in general, and your statements do that. We don't want women in the military, especially in combat. What a terrible statement. So please, do not deny that you've made those statements. You have.
Democratic New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand questioning Defense Secretary nominee Pete Hegseth. And this is Democratic Senator Mazie Hirono of Hawaii.
In June of 2020, then-President Trump directed former Secretary of Defense Mark Esper to shoot protesters in the legs in downtown D.C., an order Secretary Esper refused to comply with. Would you carry out such an order from President Trump?
Senator, I was in the Washington, D.C. National Guard unit that was in Lafayette Square during those
events. Would you carry out an order to shoot protesters in the legs?
I saw 50 Secret Service agents get injured by rioters trying to jump over the fence, set the church on fire, and destroy a statue.
You know what? That sounds to me that you will comply with such an order. You will shoot protesters in the leg. Moving on. President-elect has attacked our allies in recent weeks, refusing to rule out using military force to take over Greenland and the Panama Canal, and threatening to make Canada the 51st state. Would you carry out an order from President Trump to seize Greenland, a territory of our NATO ally Denmark, by force, or would you comply with an order to take over the Panama Canal?
Senator, I will emphasize that President Trump received 77 million votes to be the lawful commander-in-chief
of this country. We're not talking about the election. My question is, would you use our military to take over Greenland or an ally of Denmark?
Senator, one of the things that President Trump is so good at is never strategically tipping his hand. And so I would never in this public forum give one way or another what orders the president would give me in any context.
That sounds to me that you would contemplate carrying out such an order to basically invade Greenland and take over the Panama Canal.
Democratic Senator Mazie Hirono of Hawaii questioning Pete Hegseth at his confirmation hearing before the Senate Armed Forces Committee. This is Virginia Democratic Senator Tim Kaine, who asked Hegseth about allegations that he raped a woman at a Republican women's conference in Monterey, California in 2017.
I want to return to the incident that you referenced a minute ago that occurred in Monterey, California in October 2017. At that time, you were still married to your second wife, correct?
I believe so.
And you had just fathered a child by a woman who would later become your third wife, correct?
Senator, I was falsely charged, investigated, and completely cleared.
So you think you were completely cleared because you committed no crime? That's your definition of cleared? You had just fathered a child 2 months before by a woman that was not your wife. I am shocked that you would stand here and say you're completely cleared. Can you so casually cheat on a second wife and cheat on the mother of a child that had been born 2 months before, and you tell us you are completely cleared?
Senator,
how is that a complete clear?
Senator, her child's name is Gwendolyn Hope Hegseth, and she's a child of God, and she's 7 years old.
And she was, and you cheated on the mother of that child less than 2 months after that daughter was born, didn't you?
Those were false charges.
Well,
investigated, and I was completely cleared. And I am so grateful for the marriage I have to this amazing woman behind me.
You've admitted that you had sex at that hotel in October 2017. You said it was consensual. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
You've admitted that it was consensual, and you were still married, and you just had a child by another woman.
Again,
how do you explain your judgment?
Completely false charges against me.
I
was completely cleared.
You have admitted that you had sex while you were married to wife two after you just had fathered a child by wife three. You've admitted that. Now, if it had been a sexual assault, that would be disqualifying to be Secretary of Defense, wouldn't it?
It was a false claim then and a false claim now.
If it had been a sexual assault, that would be disqualifying to be Secretary of Defense, wouldn't it?
That was a false claim.
Defense Secretary nominee Pete Hegseth answering questions from Virginia Democratic Senator Tim Kaine. And this is Arizona Democratic Senator Mark Kelly confronting Pete Hegseth about reports he's been drunk at work.
So while leading concerned veterans of America, there were very specific cases cited by individuals about your conduct. I'm going to go through a few of them, and I just want you to tell me if these are true or false. Very simple. Memorial Day 2014 at a CVA event in Virginia. You needed to be carried out of the event for being intoxicated.
Senator Anonymous Smears.
Just true or false? Very simple. Summer of 2014 in Cleveland, drunk in public with the CVA team.
Anonymous Smears.
I'm just asking for true or false questions, true or false answers. An event in North Carolina, drunk in front of three young female staff members after you had instituted a no alcohol policy and then reversed it. True or false?
Anonymous Smears.
December of 2014 at the CVA Christmas party at the Grand Hyatt at Washington, D.C., you were noticeably intoxicated and had to be carried up to your room. Is that true or false?
Anonymous Smears.
Another time, a CVA staffer stated that you passed out in the back of a party bus. Is that true or false?
Anonymous Smears.
In 2014, while in Louisiana on official business for CVA, did you take your staff, including young female staff members, to a strip club?
Absolutely not. Anonymous Smears.
I'm going to leave with concerns about your transparency. You say you've had personal issues in your past, yet when asked about those very issues, you blame an anonymous smear campaign, even when many of these claims are not anonymous. Which is it? Have you overcome personal issues, or are you the target of a smear campaign? It can't be both. It's clear to me that you're not being honest with us or the American people, because you know the truth would disqualify you from getting the job. And just as concerning as each of these specific disqualifying accusations are, what concerns me just as much is the idea of having a Secretary of Defense who is not transparent.
That was Arizona Democratic Senator Mark Kelly. No Democrats got to meet with Hegseth before that hearing, except for the ranking member, Senator Reid. Meanwhile, Republican Senator Mark Wayne Mullen of Oklahoma criticized the Democrats' questioning of Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth.
Senator Kane, or I guess I better use the senator from Virginia, starts bringing up the fact that what if you showed up drunk to your job? How many senators have showed up drunk to vote at night? Have any of you guys asked them to step down and resign for their job? And don't tell me you haven't seen it, because I know you have. And then how many senators do you know have got a divorce before cheating on their wives? Did you ask them to step down? No. But it's for show. You guys make sure you make a big show and point out the hypocrisy, because a man's made a mistake.
And those are some of the excerpts from Pete Hegseth's Senate confirmation hearing on Tuesday. When we come back, we'll be joined by two military veterans who were arrested for protesting Hegseth at the hearing. Stay with us. Mungo Jerry. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. We're continuing to look at Pete Hegseth's confirmation hearing to become defense secretary before the Senate Armed Forces Committee. Three U.S. veterans were arrested for disrupting the hearing. This is former Merchant Marine Al Glatkowski with Veterans for Peace.
Pete, you are a misogynist. Not only that, you are a Christian Zionist, and you support the war in Gaza.
Former military intelligence analyst Josephine Gilbo was also removed and arrested Tuesday after interrupting Hegseth's confirmation hearing. She served in the military from 2006 to 2023.
War fighting, accountability.
Hey, corrupt senators, when are you going to stop bombing babies in Gaza? Veterans are committing suicide and are homeless. My father, a veteran, committed suicide, and you're sending money to bomb babies.
You'll sit down.
I'm leaving, man.
We need money. We need money for veterans committing suicide. Veterans are homeless. We need money here, not to bomb babies in Gaza. Shame on all of you. My father, a veteran, committed suicide. We need money to help veterans who have PTSD. Not money to send to bomb babies. My father was a veteran who committed suicide. Yet we send our money to bomb babies in Gaza. What are we doing? Shame on all of you who don't speak up against the genocide.
We'll be joined by Josephine Gilbo in a minute, but this is former U.S. Army Ranger Greg Stoker, who was carried out of Tuesday's hearing. Stoker served four combat deployments in Afghanistan.
Retention crisis and
20 years of illegal war and genocide in Gaza. That's the recruiting crisis. No money for disaster.
Sit down.
I'm going to leave.
Let's go. Can I leave? No. Let's go. Can I leave, please? Out this way.
That was former U.S. Army Ranger Greg Stoker, who joins us now in Washington, D.C., along with former military intelligence analyst Josephine Gilbo. They were both arrested for protesting during Pete Hegseth's confirmation hearing before the Senate Armed Services Committee. We thank you both for being with us. Josephine, let's begin with you. Talk about your service in the military, and then talk about why you were protesting and got arrested yesterday.
Thank you, Amy, for having me on. I served 17 years in the military. I was a combat medic, and then I became an intelligence officer. And I have a background in working with, you know, combat units, infantry units. And the reason that I am protesting in this way specifically is because I have used all other avenues to try and reach my leadership about what we are participating in and funding, which is the genocide inside of Gaza. For over 460 days, I have witnessed with my own eyes children getting bombed daily, indiscriminately. I understand what self-defense is, and what I'm witnessing is not self-defense. And I do have a concern, especially as a Christian woman here in America, that someone like Pete is using his religion to try and approve of what we are witnessing. And so I look at the next 4 years of him serving in this position, which he is unqualified for, and it looks like we're going to most likely see more death and destruction at the hands of the military-industrial complex.
Can you talk about your own father as you were being taken out? You were talking about military suicides.
Yes. So something that I advocate a lot for is the fact that in America, there are 22-plus veteran suicides a day, as well as a significant increase in veteran homelessness. Over the past year, so many veterans are waking up and coming to the reality of what we participated in. And basically, we were used as pawns for the rich who have assets and interests. It's not our country's interest. It's not the American people's interest. It's the elite's interest. And they use us to as pawns to go to these wars and ultimately kill innocent people. And so for me, this is obviously my father was a veteran, and I stated he did commit suicide. This is something that I feel like our country lacks the ability or capacity to actually acknowledge. The reason why veterans are committing suicide and have PTSD is because they sacrifice their humanity and consciousness in order to carry out these horrific actions. And now that's caught up to them. And there's no healing that can be allowed in these communities until our government can and leaders can actually acknowledge what veterans are experiencing.
Greg Stoker, we just watched you carried out of that hearing yesterday. You are a former U.S. Army Ranger with a background in special operations and human intelligence. You're now an anti-war activist and analyst with Mint Press News. You had four combat deployments from 2009 to 2013 during the Afghanistan war surge. Pete Hegseth also was an infantry officer in the Army National Guard. He deployed to Afghanistan, Iraq, and Guantanamo. Explain why you were out there yesterday getting arrested at the hearing.
Well, I felt like I had to do something to disrupt it. As an anti-war veteran activist, I take a lot of notes from the Vietnam backlash, and I don't expect to really affect any sort of massive social change. But I do believe that like voting and protesting are some of the like least effective ways of enacting political change. However, my one goal was to visibly protest, disrupt the hearing in order to hopefully like inspire other veterans who may be on the fence about like getting involved, getting active in the movement, in an intersectional anti-war movement. And, you know, it'll take years to normalize that, but, you know, just keep pushing the ball forward. That's basically my one goal by disrupting the meeting. Didn't expect it to change anything. Obviously, it won't. But again, normalizing this, activism within the veteran community is helpful, mostly because it's harder rhetorically for the powers that be to dismiss us as terrorist sympathizers when, I don't know, we've actively engaged al-Qaeda and the Islamic State and stuff like that. And that's kind of our goal within the anti-war movement, to just be there and make it rhetorically more challenging for, as you said, the elites to dismiss us.
Well, let me ask you about what Republican Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas said when asked Pete Hegseth about your protest.
We've got a big audience here. Many of them seem to be patriotic supporters of you, Mr. Hegseth. Some of them seem to be liberal critics of you. I would note that it's only the liberal critics that have disrupted this hearing. As was my custom during the Biden administration, I want to give you a chance to respond to what they said about you. I think the first one accused you of being a Christian Zionist. I'm not really sure why that is a bad thing. I'm a Christian. I'm a Zionist. Zionism is that the Jewish people deserve a homeland in the ancient Holy Land where they've lived since the dawn of history. Do you consider yourself a Christian Zionist?
Senator, I'm a Christian, and I robustly support the state of Israel and its existential defense and the way America comes alongside them as their great
Thank
ally.
You. Because another protester, and I think this one was a member of Code Pink, which, by the way, is a Chinese communist front group these days, said that you support Israel's war in Gaza. I support Israel's existential war in Gaza. I assume, like me and President Trump, you support that war as well, don't you?
Senator, I do. I support Israel destroying and killing every last member of Hamas.
That was Pete Hegseth being questioned by Arkansas Republican Senator Cotton. Greg Stoker, your response.
Well, it's just a completely unviable operational goal to defeat Hamas. They've created a whole new acronym, Wounded Child, No Surviving Family. Blinken himself, I think you played the clip earlier, that Hamas is obviously bloodied and shook, but they've replenished their ranks and they're going to keep fighting. What we've learned from counterinsurgency operations during the unfortunately named Global War on Terror is that bombing campaigns and general counterinsurgency operations, especially the way Israel's running it, are completely ineffective. So hopefully there's a ceasefire soon, but Hamas is not going to be defeated unless they literally kill everyone inside Gaza. And that's something he should have learned counterinsurgency operations in Iraq and Afghanistan. But I don't think it's clear he didn't learn anything from our 20 years of engagement in that theater.
Let me ask you, Josephine Gilbo, about Pete Hegseth's views of women. He wrote in his 2024 book that women are meant to be life givers and shouldn't serve in combat roles. He said, dads push us to take risks. Moms put the training wheels on our bikes. We need moms, but not in the military, especially not in combat units. Your response?
Well, Amy, I actually am was selected to be the first female intelligence officer inside of an infantry battalion. And so I am familiar with what it looks like to integrate with combat MOSs and infantry. So I can assure you that this narrative is just something that doesn't actually exist among the ranks. If I went back and spoke directly with anyone that I served with inside of that infantry battalion, not one of them would say that I wasn't a good member of the team. I did my job as an intelligence analyst, and I did it very well. And I was very much respected by all of the males that were infantry officers and infantry enlisted. So it's just a narrative that they're using. And I can assure you that things like what Pete says and Tom Cotton is not how the Christian conservative community feels. As someone who grew up in the Republican Christian conservative community, they do not represent how we feel. And Tom Cotton is a corrupt politician who is bought and paid for by corporations and AIPAC, and he does not actually represent the American people. And even his own constituents in Arkansas understand that.
During Tuesday's hearing, Maine Independent Senator Angus King asked Hegseth about the Geneva Conventions.
Are we going to abide by the Geneva Convention and the prohibitions on torture, or are we not? Is it going to depend on the circumstances?
As I've stated multiple times, the Geneva Conventions are what we base ours. But what an American first national security policy is not going to do is hand its prerogatives over to international bodies that make decisions about how our men and women make decisions on the battlefield.
Josephine Gilbo, your response.
You know, what's interesting is the fact of how blind they think the American people and the world are. Everything that they have done in order to support Israel in this unwavering way and unconditional way while they're committing genocide has jeopardized our national security. You know, we heard earlier from former state departments that speak directly to how far they've jeopardized our national security by you know, violating international laws, violating the Geneva Conventions. We're literally watching a huge shift in the global economy and alliances happening from NATO over to BRICS, because the reality is the global South has realized that we are hypocrites and we no longer are fit to be a global power because we refuse to follow international laws and the Geneva Convention. And ultimately, the biggest victim of all of this are the children. And we cannot normalize as American citizens the bombing indiscriminately of children the way that we have for decades now in the Middle East.
I also wanted to ask you about the accusations that Pete Hegseth had sexually assaulted and raped a woman in 2017. It's been reported in many places that she has a non-disclosure agreement now that and was paid off by Hegseth. During his confirmation hearing, he dismissed the allegations as, quote, coordinated smear campaign. Meanwhile, the New York Times reports Hegseth's own mother once accused him of mistreating women in 2018. Penelope Hegseth wrote him an email that read in part, on behalf of all the women, and I know it's many, you've abused in some way. I say get some help and take an honest look at yourself. The email was sent a year after that woman accused Hegseth of raping her at the California Hotel at the Republican Women's Convention. What concerns do you have about Pete Hegseth in relation to this issue, and also this issue of public drunkenness. Everyone, those accusing him from people working in his veterans organization, where he was accused of financial mismanagement, to those who work at Fox who accused him of being drunk as he went on air and saying they smelt alcohol in his breath. Again, he repeatedly said anonymous smears.
Yeah, I think it's shocking to me and disturbing how we are selecting this type of quality to be in these leadership positions for our country, and just how shameful and embarrassing it is as American citizens that there isn't anyone else out there that is more qualified, number one, even if you don't, you know, compile all these factors you just named about his behavior. If you just look directly at his resume, this individual is not qualified to be in this position. And then you compound it with these other factors that you're talking about, and you're talking about normalizing someone that has these types of behaviors to be in leadership roles. What sort of precedence is that setting, just, you know, in a world view in our country, that you can be in positions of power and have been accused of doing these types of things to women?
Finally, Greg Stoker, you served in the military for years. You were, what, 4 times deployed to Afghanistan. What changed your mind? I mean, your criticism was not only of Hegseth, both of you. You're talking about Israel's war on Gaza, which took place during the Biden administration, which continually has armed Israel throughout.
Yeah, I think what first started to get me to question the war machine, we could say, is I was in tactical operations centers actively watching. I was actually plugged into the synchronization process of kinetic drone strikes, and there just really wasn't a huge standard of proof for everybody that was being dropped. And then I think what caused me to speak out early on was about a few days after October 7th, when the bombing campaign really picked up in retaliation for October 7th, we were watching about 1,000-pound GBUs, guided bomb units, dropped on Gaza. And I think I was watching General Petraeus say, yes, we did that. We did that in Baghdad, and we did that in Afghanistan. First of all, we did not. One of my best friends was in a fire control center in Baghdad during that time. You could not drop those ordnance. And I think watching these paid-for pundits on legacy media straight-up lie to the American people is kind of what got me started down this path. I had been following the Palestine issue for a long time, but I was not a public figure then. So, warfare is kind of like law, and that you need to be really careful about what precedents are set. And now we have set for modern warfare going forward things like the state policy of directly targeting and bombing hospitals. And because of what's happened, the world is a less safe place, and this country is a less safe place. So
Greg
I encourage
Stoker,
every veteran. Yeah,
and
thank you.
Josephine Gilbo, I want to thank you both for being with us. Two military veterans arrested by Capitol Police after protesting during Pete Hegseth's confirmation hearing on Tuesday morning. They were working alongside Code Pink, which was also protesting. Gilbo's a former military intelligence analyst, now a fellow at the Eisenhower Media Network. And Greg Stoker is a former U.S. Army Ranger with a background in special operations and human intelligence collection, now anti-war activist analyst with Mint Press News. He served 4 combat deployments in Afghanistan. Up next, surviving war and HIV. Queer, HIV positive, and running out of medication in Gaza. Back in 20 seconds. Unlimited Capacity for Love by Grace Jones. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Surviving war and HIV, queer, HIV positive, and running out of medication in Gaza. That's the headline of an Intercept piece. We end today's show with a powerful new report that tells the story of ES, a 27-year-old who lives with his mother and younger brother in Gaza City and who is HIV positive. He says he agreed to speak with The Intercept using an assumed name in order to, quote, avoid community stigma and targeting by the Israeli authorities, unquote. We're joined now by two reporters who wrote the piece. Stephen Thrasher is inaugural Daniel H. Renberg Chair of Social Justice, focused on the LGBT community at Northwestern University's Medill School. He's author of The Viral Underclass, The Human Toll When Inequality and Disease Collide. And here in New York, Afif Nazouli is with us, journalist, host of With Afif Nazouli. He's reported from the occupied Palestinian territory since 2011. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Afif, let's begin with you. Tell us this young man's story in Gaza right now.
So this young man reached out to me in March and basically had found my reporting online, on Instagram. I had been sort of helping queer people in Palestine, sort of amplifying their voices. He reached out in a DM and said, listen, I've seen your work, and I'm queer and I'm Gazan, and I'd really like to talk to you about something and clear my mind. After a bunch of voice notes back and forth, he kind of revealed that he had contracted HIV about 10 years ago and that he was essentially running out of medication because of the genocide. And it was hard for him to sort of ask for help, but it was obvious that he needed help. He was in northern Gaza at the time. I changed his name, obviously, for his protection, and he would tell me things about his cats, his art, his mom, his brother, his belief in God, his queerness, and all of these really deep things, but he never really asked for help until things were getting worse and worse, and he was always sort of 1 or 2 months away from medication. He was getting medication from different sources in northern Gaza. Like the group GLIA, who was trying to coordinate medication for all sorts of different kinds of people there. But we found out that, you know, depots were being targeted by Israeli airstrikes. There was limited supply. He was getting medication from a doctor's brother who had taken medication and put it in his house. It was always just sort of a race against time. And over the summer, his brother would, like, brave the streets. I remember in July, his brother sort of braved the streets and went and sort of picked up more medication, but it was still very limited in amount. And we discussed kind of going further into publishing a story. So we started recording our conversations. In October, his house was targeted. He barely survived. His mother and his brother and him were displaced. It became extremely important to get this story out as soon as possible. Dr. Thrasher reached out to me sort of almost divinely in alignment. It just felt so right. And he said, listen, this story is really important. Let's listen to some of these tapes that you've got. And we started pitching it out. In the interim, Tariq Lubani of GLIA had reached out to me.
A Palestinian-Canadian physician?
Yes, the Palestinian-Canadian physician with GLIA reached out to me to basically say, listen, I've seen your stuff. I've seen this story. I want to help in any way I can. It was really hard because there were so many times in which Tariq tried to get medication in, got confiscated at one point. His NGO got banned at one point because of appearing in an article in the New York Times. It was just like bad news after one thing after the next, but ES was simply unwavering in his faith.
He walks with a walker.
He's confined to a walker because he also contracted neurosyphilis. He had years on and off of care in Gaza. There was a lot of sort of stigma from his family, a lot of complications sort of with shame. But in the same token, there were a lot of doctors in Gaza who helped him unconditionally, a lot of people who really saved his life. So in any place, like, there's homophobia and there's also unconditional love.
What does Queering the Map mean?
Queering the Map is a resource that I found early on in the genocide, around October or November, where there are people around the world who upload sort of messages to each other just about where they're at, where they are in the world, and what their experience is. And I, you know, sort of went to Gaza and I went to the West Bank and I started uploading messages that I had found. And that actually brought in a lot of queer people that I started speaking to in Gaza. This is not the only person in Gaza that I'm speaking to. There's trans people in Gaza. There's people who are gay men, lesbian. Obviously, we know that. But it's very helpful when you have stories to amplify, because then you can really give specificity.
Has Yes tried to get out of Gaza?
He really didn't try for a really long time. He loves Gaza. He loves the beach. He loves his home.
He actually was a student in high school here in the United
States. Yes, he was. He had gotten a full scholarship, not only to high school, but then later for some years in college, before he contracted and decided he couldn't handle like being HIV positive alone without his family and away from Gaza. So he decided to go back. And I think now he would, I think in the later stages of our conversations, evacuation seemed a lot more compelling to him. But again, he loves Gaza. He doesn't want to leave, but he has to.
Stephen Thrasher, it's great to have you back on Democracy Now! Professor Thrasher, talk about how HIV spreads more quickly in war zones.
Well, HIV has given the world lots of ways to learn about how to be in better relation to our own health and how to navigate with this virus. And something a lot of people don't know is that prior to HIV, healthcare workers didn't wear gloves. There are all these universal protocols that we now take for granted. If you're old enough, I don't know if you remember this, Amy. I remember my dentist not using gloves as a child. And there are all these practices that came up that were developed that not only prevented HIV transmission by assuming everyone potentially could have HIV, but that had many benefits for all kinds of health matters. None of those precautions can be followed in Gaza. And it has nothing to do with the professionalism of healthcare workers. They are heroes and angels. 1,000 of them have been killed. You know, maybe hundreds are being held in torture camps right now. But when you don't have clean water, when you don't have gloves, when you have people with open wounds on blood-soaked floors, when you have people who not only lack gloves but lack medical training trying to save their neighbors after bombings, when there's so many shrapnel wounds, you cannot contain HIV or hepatitis or any bloodborne illnesses. And the genocide is making it impossible to get medication to people like ES, whose story is so touching and beautiful and what he's gone through to try to get medication. But the occupation itself keeps ideas, medicine, practices from being able to easily come into these places. And so what we're seeing in Gaza around HIV speaks to other diseases as well. But it's also illustrative of what happens in war zones. In Ukraine and Russia, where there is more empirical data, we can already see that there are heightened levels of HIV and AIDS in both of those countries and in neighboring areas because of so much displacement, because universal protocols are not being used, and because public health infrastructures are really breaking down.
Stephen Thrasher, we only have 2 minutes, but can you explain what pinkwashing is and its relevance to what's happening in Gaza now?
Pinkwashing is something that the United States and Israel use to say that we are the only safe countries for LGBTQ people because we make LGBTQ people safe in our countries. And it erases the queer people who are in places like Palestine. In Israel, they don't have same-sex marriage. They have all kinds of homophobia as well. But certainly Palestinians are not safe in Israel because they are not full citizens. And within the within Palestine, there is a erasing of the queer people who are there. As Afif was saying, queering the map shows that there are queer people there. And as ES said, he invoked the phrase, silence equals death. And we can't be silent about the queer people who are in Gaza. They need our help. People who are living with HIV need our help. And even though they do deal with homophobia and things in their society, it's been very touching to see how many healthcare workers have been trying to help them. The Gaza Ministry of Health is talking to them is like talking to the New York City Department of Health. They are extremely on top of trying to help people with HIV. They proactively went to the people living with HIV throughout Gaza right at the beginning of the genocide and tried to get them 3 months of medication. And pinkwashing pretends like those people don't exist when we need to be in solidarity with them and protect them. And I hope, if anything from our story, LGBTQ people around the world will see ES and see that there are queer people there and will want to help their queer siblings.
We just have 30 seconds, Professor Thrasher, but an update from you on where you stand at Northwestern as a professor at the McGill School, at the Medill School of Journalism.
I can't say anything publicly now. I hope I can soon, but I'm very happy with the direction things are going. I hope to be teaching again very soon, and Yeah, I hope to have more news for you soon. But I'm feeling good about where things are going, and I really appreciate all the support people watching Democracy Now! From around the world have shown me during this difficult time.
Stephen Thrasher, I want to thank you for being with us from Chicago, a professor at the McGill School of Journalism, focusing on social justice at Northwestern University, co-author with Afif Nazouli of the Intercept piece, Surviving War and HIV, Queer HIV Positive and Running Out of Medication in Gaza. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Dr. Oscar Adoli, bringing you the best mix of music.